Are you a sales professional who feels like you're stuck in the sea of sameness, you know, struggling to demonstrate that you offer any unique value to your prospects? Or how about this one? Do you feel like you have a hard time connecting with customers because let's say you get in a meeting and you really don't even know what the right questions to ask are, and because of that, you can't build any sort of deep relationship with them? Or finally, what about, do you ever get the feeling that your prospects just flat out don't trust you? Well, let me tell you, you're not alone. Those are three of the most common challenges that sales professionals are, of all levels, are struggling from, especially in today's day and age where trust is really at an all-time low for buyers. Our guest today is going to share a ton of actionable takeaways to overcome those challenges and many, many more. His name is Larry Levine. Larry has decades of real-world sales experience, which I think is super important to help coach and train other people. Larry is also a great keynote speaker. He's a best-selling author, one of my favorite books, Selling from the Heart. He's got a great podcast of the same name. And as of today, August 13th, 2024, his new book, Selling in a Post-Stress World, is just being released. I read it. The whole Learn It team read the book, and we got a ton of great value out of it. And we're going to talk about that today. And I'm Damon Lemby, the CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has upskilled over 2 million people over the past three decades. And you're listening to the Learn It All podcast, the podcast where great leaders aren't born or made, they're constantly in the making. Let's dive in and get started and enjoy today's episode. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Learn It All podcast. I'm your host, Damon Lemby, and I'm also the CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has upskilled over 2 million individuals over the past three decades. I'm super excited about today's episode. Our guest is Larry Levine, and he's the international best-selling author of Selling from the Heart, and he's got a new book out today, Selling in a Post-Trust World. Larry is also the co-host of Selling from the Heart podcast, an award-winning show. He also has over three decades of in-the-field experience, which I think is key these days, especially when you're leading and coaching. Besides doing what he does, he's also a big Dodgers fan, unfortunately.
Hey, dude, you can't hold that one against me. Come on, man.
Oh, here we go already, right? Anyways, so Larry, welcome to the show, buddy.
Oh, you know what, Damon? It's so good to see you. And first of all, thank you. Thank you for having me on your show. And thank you for all the support. It really means a lot.
No, you're awesome. And for the listeners out there, about 3 weeks ago, we had Larry came in. He was kind enough. I was able to get advanced copies of his new book, which we'll talk about today. And my whole team read it, not just my sales team, but my customer experience team. And then Larry did our kickoff sales event for the third quarter. And people are really, really charged up over it, Larry. So I'm really grateful for that. And thank you. So let's just get into it though, man. I've been following your work for a long time. And let's just start off with how do you define what an empty suit is? And can you give me the top three traits of what makes a great sales professional?
And so we're going to have a terrific time with this. And I just have to preface this when I say, listen, when I wrote chapter 10 of Selling from the Heart, and I wanted to put a bow on it, I had to figure out, you know, what's some way I can just put a nice tidy bow on this book to get people to think. However, I knew I had another book in me. I just didn't know when it was going to come out. But to me, you know, I wanted to have a signature moment in the book, Damon. And that's why I came up with the whole philosophy of empty suits. And it's not to disrespect the sales world. I love everything about the sales world. It's not to cast a dark shadow over the sales world. None whatsoever. The whole premise of an empty suit is to get people to think. And when I think of an empty suit, I think of somebody who's not educating on a consistent basis. I think of someone who's not engaging with their clients on a consistent basis. When I think of an empty suit, I think of people who don't excite them into conversations consistently. I think of people who don't bring heart to the forefront, who make it all about me, who shine the light on them. And there's a lot of emptiness out there. And it doesn't really have to be that way. So I just, when I think of empty suits, I think of people who aren't educating. They're not engaging. They're not exciting people into conversations. You know, it's selling from the heart. We call this, they just don't give a rip. They just don't give a rip about anyone other than themselves. And quite frankly, in the world that we live in today, people sense it. People sense it in tonality. People sense it when you're leaning in or leaning out. They can sense all of this. So I just take people down this whole path of, man, you just can't be an empty suit. You really can't. But if we flip this around and we look at how do you avoid being that empty suit, or what do these sales professionals, at least through my lens, do that's completely different? They lead their life with heart. They're all about empathy. They have high integrity. They have high moral standards. They have high character. They work on themselves harder than anybody else will work on them. They got high discipline. They're consistent. They're consistently doing the right things right, even if they don't feel like doing them.
Larry, that's great. Why do you think that people fall into the empty suit category? Is it they're lazy? Is it because you think that maybe they think they're a know-it-all? I love what you were just saying a second ago, right? You know, so people who are empty suits, they're not spending the time on continuous learning. They make the sales conversation about themselves, right? And they're just basically showing up, not really even showing up, but they're just kind of going through the motions. Why is that?
I can name a bunch of reasons, but it just goes back to one of my favorite phrases in Selling from the Heart, and I think it really ties into what you're saying, is salespeople have hypnotized themselves into believing what they're not doing doesn't work. And I think a lot of people out there, now there's a double negative in there. It gets people to think a little bit, but I'm going to stick up for salespeople on this one, is maybe that's the environment they grew up in. That's all they know. And there's a lot of great work being done out there. But what's happening is this is just my belief on this, is a vast majority of what salespeople are honed into or skilled trained to is all these outer skills. It's all the outer skills. Well, what I'm talking about is if you want to become the elite of the elite, if you want to avoid being an empty suit, you got to go inward. You have to go inward in order to go outward. And a lot of, and the only reason why I know this is we do this, and this is the challenge that I throw out to a lot of salespeople out there. And I'm all about mindset. I'm all about having engaging, sometimes controversial conversations. The reason why I bring it up is this: there's not a lot of salespeople that will look at themselves in the mirror and say, what do I need to do to improve? What do I need to do to work on me? I've always said this, the mirror doesn't lie. Only the person looking into the mirror lies.
Larry, let me just stop you for 1 second there. And I love what you talk about in your new book, you know, Man in the Mirror. But I've been leading a sales team that learn it for 30 years. And you know what I always say? I always say, hey, look, we're going to give you all the resources we need to give you. We're going to do the best we can do. At the end of the day, if you lose a deal, you know what you got to do? Look in the mirror. Yeah. That's why. Hey, you know, you could make excuses and say, hey, we lost on price, or we're a smaller competitor. We're whatever it is you want to say. And maybe sometimes that comes into the mix and maybe that's a variable. But really, wouldn't you agree that people buy from people that they like and people they trust?
I'm going to take this one step farther. And we've all heard the saying, you've just used some of the words. We've heard that, and people just really need to key in on this one, because I think we got to go one step beyond this, is in today's world, if you want to avoid being an empty suit, if you want to look at being viewed as that sales professional who's got high moral character, who's full of integrity, I believe in today's day and age, you have to go beyond people do business with people they know, like, and trust. And here's why I'm saying this. I'm all about people. I'm all about, you know, the likability and the trust factor, but I don't want people to get caught in the friend zone. And so the reason why I bring this up is now, because I write about it in Selling in a Post-Trust World very early on. I said, I'm going to incorporate the 3 R's into this. I'm going to layer in what you just said. We have to be, if you buy into the whole concept, people do business with people they know, like, and trust, then guess what, folks? You got to be real, you got to be relevant, and you got to be relatable. And if you're missing any one of those three, it becomes difficult, because I think people are looking way beyond, is this person a nice person? Is this person likable, right? Of course, you're a person, right? People do business with people. That's as old gets. I mean, that's never going to go away because we're all humans. But in the world full of skepticism, in a world that lacks trust, if you want to raise the bar, are you being real? Are you relevant? And are you relatable? How fast can you connect and relate to somebody? But all too often, people are worried, you know, they're worried about being friends and being liked. I'd rather be viewed as being trustworthy and credible. Because if you're not viewed as trustworthy and credible, can you really get to know someone and can you really like them? I'll leave that one up for people to think about. But I'd ask you right now, are you being real? Not only are you being real with yourself, but are you being real with your clients and your future clients? How well are you relating to them? And how relevant are you? And if you can stop and think about that, again, those are mirror moments. But we can do so much better as salespeople, but it's all up to you. Y'all might work for a great company that's got great leadership, but when this is all said and done, you're responsible for how you show up. It's not your company's responsibility. It's not your leadership's responsibility. It's yours. And I always ask people, how do you want to be viewed?
I've sat on hundreds of calls on the flip side, right, where somebody's selling to me. And when we talk about trust as part of the three R's right there, being relevant, being real, trust to me also comes into it that the salesperson or the person on the other side, that I could trust that they know what they're talking about, right? That they've spent some time and they're really, instead of trying to come up with another answer and pitch something to me, but that they're listening and that they're going to provide me a direction that would be really help us get us towards the outcomes that we need, or the, you know, the challenges we're trying to solve, instead of just pushing, you know, an agenda down our throat, right? And that to me is I think it's so critically important.
Absolutely. I've always said this, and I think there's an art behind having a conversation with somebody. And I've thrown swords, and I've needled on this for a while, but there's a lot of salespeople out there that are conversationally incompetent. Not to say that they're bad people; they're not bad people. Having conversations require practice. Having business conversations require practice. And if I look at this, and this is just my viewpoint on this, Damon, but when I sit there and I took this to heart a long time ago. And by the way, everyone, I sold photocopiers in Los Angeles for 30 years. Most laggard, highly commoditized, race to the bottom industry that I could possibly think of. I'll throw in dysfunctional as well.
And how'd you do things differently? That's one of the questions. So how were you in a sea of vanilla? What did you do differently that helped set you apart?
This is a great question. This is what I'm getting to, is it's the art behind having a conversation with somebody. That conversation wasn't about me. It was about them. And in Selling from the Heart, I write about it. It's the artful blend of having a personal and a professional conversation. And what made me different and what made me stand out is two words. And this is what I held myself accountable to. And maybe it was my secret sauce. And I always say everyone has a secret sauce. But my secret sauce for ever selling copiers in Los Angeles was my ability to connect and relate to somebody really fast. And so when I sat down with an executive, and let's just say it was you, Damon. I wanted Damon to feel so comfortable with me that soon he became comfortable. The faster I can get Damon to become comfortable with me, the faster Damon opens up. The faster Damon opens up, then he's going to start sharing business secrets with me that he's not sharing with somebody else. And the reason why I bring this up, it goes right back to my very first business coach I had. And I struggled a lot with this early on in my sales career. And some might call this positioning and so forth. But I remember I sat down with my business coach and I said, man, I am really struggling with connecting with people. These are financial decision makers, IT decision makers. He says, I'm going to give you something. He goes, this is a piece of advice that was told to me. It's not rocket science stuff. He goes, quit acting like a salesperson. They already know you're in sales. Quit acting like a salesperson. Now, as simple as that sounds, it hit me. It just hit me square, right? Like right between the eyes. And I go, what would it be like if I just had a conversation with Damon, just like he and I were friends? Not salesperson to a key decision maker. And the light bulb soon just switched in my head. But this goes back to practice. I practice conversations and I practice how to open conversations and I would practice and I practice and I'd be disciplined with it. And I'm not afraid to try new things. And I would just find ways that I can open up conversations real quick to get somebody to think, to put somebody at ease. And once I started doing that, I started seeing people just go, finally, right? I know you're a salesperson, but I'm not talking to a salesperson.
I love that, Larry. And when with our team meeting we had the other day, one of the other things that you mentioned is that go into these meetings, you know, these customers of yours or prospects, they've probably met with 30 people beforehand, right? So come in a little differently. Listen, be curious, ask different questions, right? So can you give me an example or a story of how you've kind of been able to flip the switch where you come into whether it's a prospect call, and sometimes when you get on these calls, you could tell right away that you don't connect with somebody, they're not going to be easy to communicate with, right? What's a story and example of how you were able to help them reach that? Oh, okay. You know, and get them to open up.
So it's a baseball story. So, and I know I'm a baseball guy. You're a baseball guy. This is a baseball story, but it's going to play out. This is just one of many. I remember it was later on in my career. And this was after I had sold a portion of my copier dealership back to my business partners. And I moved on. I went to go work for Japanese OEM in downtown LA. And I walked into a zero base position. It was corporate major account team, zero base. They didn't give me a lick of accounts, none, zero. I had to fend for myself. And I'm sharing this because one day they started seeing what I was doing out there. And they go, Larry, we're going to give you this account. And I go, okay, I was really excited because it was a big account, right? It was a nice sized bank in Southern California. And they go, here's the deal. This person is difficult to deal with. Key decision maker. Every single person who has walked into this place has walked out going, what did I get myself into? Okay. So I set up an appointment and the guy said yes, only just because it was a current account situation and so forth. I won't get you in all the details that led me into this. But again, what was going in the back of my mind is this person is chewed on salesperson after salesperson after salesperson. I walked in, shook the guy's hand. I spanned his room in about 2 seconds. I saw pictures of his boy playing baseball. I saw baseballs all over the place. And again, some of y'all might be going, this is old school stuff. I always said the faster I connect to someone's heart, the faster they're going to open up. I took one look at a picture sitting behind him. And I said, that picture of your boy reminds me of when my boy played travel baseball. Those were some of the best memories I ever had, is watching my boy play travel baseball. Your boy plays travel baseball. Yes, he does. How'd you know? Because I recognized some of the uniforms that these kids were wearing because my son played travel ball in Southern California. And for 25 minutes, all we talked about was baseball. And we talked about travel ball. And we talked about our boys. And we talked about all those heartfelt things. And then finally, I flipped the switch and I said, you know something? I'm going to be really transparent with you. you've chewed on a lot of salespeople that have walked in this door from my company. How come you haven't chewed on me? He goes, you're talking my love language. Hey, by the way, if you don't mind, can I just share a quick backstory? And I shared him a quick backstory of all the work that I have done because I used to have a copier dealership. And I made him feel at ease. I made him feel comfortable. And guess what? The person opened up. The person shared their business secrets. In one meeting, I got farther and faster than most salespeople did. One simple reason is I don't care what y'all sell. And I really want people to key in on this. Most salespeople live in a commoditized world. As tough as this may sound, I believe most people sell in a commoditized world. Just, you know, a competitor can come out with something faster, bigger, cheaper. Doesn't really matter. Set all that aside. I just knew the faster I can connect to somebody's heart and shine the light on them, the faster they're going to open up. The faster they open up, magic starts to happen. And that's just one of many stories. But some people are going, man, that's just old school stuff. Well, guess what? What's forever old is forever new. This stuff still plays out. It's never, ever, ever, ever going to go away.
Hey, Larry, one thing I want to add to that is I'm a big believer in sales. And then again, also, if you want to use a baseball analogy, you got to do the fundamentals right. Whether it's old school, whether it's fundamentals, why do you think they have spring training every year where these guys who are superstars, they go in, they do batting practice, they get into repetitions. It's all about fundamentals and doing things right. And what I love about that story too is, and I'm kind of thinking here, you know, some of our listeners might be saying, okay, well, that's great, but this is how I've always gone about it. What if I go in and I don't connect and I fall on my face and I can't connect with somebody like Larry did? What I kind of hear you saying is, why not just stick your neck out there and try? Why not try to do things differently? You know, what's the worst thing that could happen, right? So do you think that being curious, of course, but also being comfortable with failure is like super critical to be able to go out and try things, to do things differently like you did?
Yeah, you know, you have to be. And I sit here and I got to be careful what I say. So I don't want to get in trouble. But there's too many people out there that try to be outlandish with their outreach. And they try to do these patterned interrupts, whether that be on a phone call outreach or first meeting or something like that. I go, that's hogwash. Why do y'all have to do that? I really believe if you all buy into this concept, Damon dropped it a few minutes ago. If y'all buy into the concept that people do business with people, set aside all that. Some of y'all might laugh at me for saying it. That's all right. I've been called worse. But key in on this. Then act like a person somebody wants to talk to. If I want to connect, if I want to relate to someone, I've always said this. Walk, talk, and act like a professional. Do the things professionals do. You don't have to get cutesy and artsy fartsy and all of this stuff with how you connect with someone, how you drive conversation. It's just no different than having a conversation with your friend. It goes back to practice. You got to understand how to practice having a conversation, connect with somebody, make them feel, and this doesn't take a long time. This can happen in matters of minutes. But it goes back to having practice. You got to be cognizant of your surroundings and you got to pan it, whether you're on virtual calls now, Team Zoom, it doesn't matter. Or you go face to face, you got to span your environment real quick. And you got to attach what you see to stories from the past, something that's going to resonate, that's going to connect to their heart. And if you can connect to their heart, watch what starts to happen. If you can't connect to their heart, they're going to be reserved. And when they're reserved, they're just going to treat you and walk you through like they've done with every other salesperson. But again, it goes back to three things. And it's three things that I think salespeople struggle with that I've worked on decade over decade over decade. It's confidence, believability, and self-worth. If you lack confidence in yourself, if you lack believability in yourself, if you lack believability in your messaging and you have low self-worth, a lot of the things that we're talking about right now, you're going to shy away from it. You're going to find every excuse not to do it. But whether it's selling from the heart or selling in a post-stress world, people are looking for someone who's real, relatable, and relevant. They want somebody who are confident. They're confident in themselves. They have competent, business-oriented conversations. Now, that's sales-centric. And they have high self-worth. I want to work with somebody who's got high moral values, got high character, who's full of integrity, who gives a rip. And that's what people are looking for. But that requires intentionality and that requires practice. You got to work on this stuff every single day, literally every single day.
Larry, I'm smiling what you're saying. In my book, I talk a lot about overcoming imposter syndrome. It first happened with me when I was a high school American. Then I got to Pepperdine and everybody was as good as I was and I froze up. And by the time I ended up at Arizona State, I figured this is my last shot. And I came up with a three-step framework. And you just said two of the steps right there, but we've talked about all three. Number one is, if I'm struggling with fear or self-doubt, is work hard. Number two is focus, which you said, intentionality, right? And number three is just kind of learn and let go. But you got to do something, right? You got to do something if you're having self-doubt about yourself. Just stick your neck out there and try. Who cares if you fail? You know, people appreciate people who try things differently.
It's really interesting. I'm a big Pastor Craig Rochelle fan. I love his message. His message resonates to me as a founding pastor of Life Church in Edmonds, Oklahoma. And I'm bringing this up for a reason because he has had every summer he does a message series and he takes movies and he takes he'll bring a movie to life with a life lesson or spirituality message around it. And this was weeks ago. I was watching one and he talked about it's a true story. It's a movie called Gran Turismo.
Is that the Clint Eastwood movie? No.
It's called it's Gran, G-R-A-N, Turismo, T-U-R-I-S-M-O. It's a true story and it takes place in Europe. But it's about this story who this guy who grew up wanting to be a race car driver and his father wanted him to be a soccer player. And he grew up playing video games, race car video games. And all of a sudden he parlayed that. I'm not going to give the whole thing away, but he parlayed that into where he became actually a race car driver. True story. And the guy actually won 24 hours at Le Mans. But there's a point behind this. Craig Rochelle busts it down and he called the title of this, "You Got to Race to Win." And the reason being is you got to be in it to win it. And how many salespeople are really in it to win it? Which means you got to be consistent. You got to do the things necessary to win, which means you got to win, first of all, with becoming the best version of yourself. And you got to be all in. And you got to be all in on this. And the reason why I bring this up, and you guys will have to go out and watch the movie. The movie's fantastic. But I went all in on myself a long time ago. I knew sales, right? No one forced me into sales. I wanted to get into sales. But I saw how crazy sales was. And I said, you know something? I'm going to work harder on myself than anybody else. And that was like that in the 20s, my 30s, 40s, and now I'm knocking on 60. And I still do that every single day. I'm a true practitioner. It's had a profound effect on my career. But maybe that's ingrained in my DNA. I go, you know what? I just wanted to change the paradigm of how salespeople were viewed. And so all I did was double down on the things that salespeople weren't doubling down on. And that's the people skills and the relationship building skills. So I learned how to connect to myself and I learned how to build a better relationship with myself. I got more comfortable with who I am. What were my strengths, weaknesses? What do I want to be known for? And I just put that out there. I just put that out there for people to see. And it started coming back and it started coming back and it started coming back. I was never the smartest salesperson out there. Never. There was people way freaking smarter than me. They were making way more money than me that can out-strategize me. But when it came to developing the people skills and relationship skills, I don't think there's anyone better than me. And I'm not saying that to be braggadocious. It's just, I just kept my clients. I never lost a client unless they got acquired by another company. And they were forced to. The simple reason is I just gave a rip about people. It's so funny. I sold copiers for 30 years and still didn't even know how they worked. That's all I ever did. But I just learned how to have conversations with people because I walked into conversations with low attachment.
What do you mean by that?
I walked into conversations not being attached to the outcome. In other words, when I walked into a conversation with Damon, and I'm a massive believer in this. This is a shout out to a friend of mine, Kevin Davis, who wrote a really great book decades ago called Slow Down, Sell Faster. I wanted to slow down. And if anyone's really astute to our conversation, a lot of this has to do, a lot of what I've been alluding to is the very opening act in all of your conversations. That's what's going to set the stage. I keyed in on that a long time ago. Most people just, they walk into that first meeting and the first meeting goes how the first meeting goes, which is usually product centric, all about me, all about my company. Oh, let me tell you why I'm here. This is the latest and greatest. This is how great they are and so forth, right? So be it. I said, man, what would it be like if I slowed it down a little bit? And I caught on to this a long time ago. But I just go, man, if I can slow this down, I actually speed my deals up because I'm doing things completely different. Because I keyed in on something. I keyed in on how salespeople were perceived, and I was massively curious. Massively curious. I would ask questions in right field. So Damon, I'm just going to throw this out there. You and I are having a conversation. And all of a sudden I'd say, hey, Damon, you talked a lot. These are right field stuff. I'd just be talking to Damon. I'd say, hey, Damon, I just got into thinking. I was listening to what you're saying. We're having a great conversation, by the way. But I got to think you probably talk to a bazillion salespeople in a given week. I sure do. How's this been going for you? And I just stop and I wouldn't say a word. I just go, hey, Damon, how's this conversation been going? And I just sit there. Just like I'm doing now. And it was so interesting to just A, to see people's facial expressions and to watch what happened next. Hey, by the way, if you've been enjoying this conversation, when's the last time you've had a conversation like this with a salesperson? Because I bet you right when I walked in the door, you had a preconceived notion of how this conversation was probably going to go based on all the 20 conversations you've had over the past week. So let me just ask you, Damon, what do you really expect from a salesperson in the very first conversation you have with them?
I love it, Larry. It loosens people up, right? I mean, you go to these meetings, especially over Zoom now, where people don't have to travel back and forth. So you could run 5-10 meetings in a row. It's a breath of fresh air to have somebody come in, ask different questions. You know, I actually really like it. And this is something you talked about when you worked with our team. Get curious and ask a lot of questions. Ask a lot of questions and try to come up and ask different questions. Make it, you know, make questions that people never get asked before. And it kind of shocks them into waking up again. And getting a little bit looser and having fun, enjoying the conversation, and it makes you more memorable as a salesperson for after you leave. And you kind of look forward to those conversations the next time they come around.
You know, 100%. One of my favorite sayings is this: if you want to achieve the results that no one's achieving, you got to be willing to do the things no one's doing. Now, I want to layer in questions on this one. If you want to get into conversations with key decision makers and executives that no one's getting into, you got to be willing to ask the questions that no one's asking. It's okay, right? One of my favorite shows. I'm a big CNBC junkie. I love watching CNBC. I love watching Shark Tank. I can watch all the freaking reruns of Shark Tank. I already know what's going to happen.
Who's your favorite guy on Shark Tank?
I'm a Mark Cuban freaking. Yeah. I'm a Mark Cuban junkie. I love everything about Mark Cuban. But so there's a couple things. There's one thing that Mark Cuban said that stuck out. Love him or hate him. I remember one time on Shark Tank, this was the shortest thing he's ever said. Most profound thing. He goes, it's okay to be nice in business. Nice matters. That's one. Second thing is I'm a big Marcus Lemonis fan. And I write about Marcus Lemonis in Selling in a Post-Trust World. And he's a CEO of Camping World. I believe he's still the CEO of Camping World. And he had a show on CNBC. Might be in reruns now called The Prophet.
Totally. I love that show.
And you got to watch The Prophet. There's so much gold by watching Shark Tank and The Prophet. But here's what's interesting. Yeah, Marcus Lemonis will buy, you know, the whole premise of the show. Yeah, there's some reality to it, but he's got a heart of gold. But he, you know, the whole premise is that he wants to buy into struggling small businesses and help them turn them around. And I remember profoundly watching this on his show one day. Someone started, right? Think of this as a key decision maker just for a moment. But this happened on the show. This plays out on why I believe what I'm going to share matters. Is Marcus Lemonis was getting really personal with someone, like extremely personal. This wasn't even business conversation. It was all personal related stuff. The guy took offense to it on the show. And he says, man, why are you asking me all these personal questions? He goes, I'm getting ready to invest money in your company. I need to know the personal side of this, not just the business side. He goes, because business is personal. The more I get to know you and what makes you tick, then I can determine if this is the right fit. Translate that into the sales world today. When you make it all business all the time, you're missing a golden opportunity to connect to somebody's heart. And this goes back to why I believe salespeople are conversationally incompetent. It's not that they're not smart people. They're just having business conversations all the time. But it's an artful blend. In that very first meeting, you got to be comfortable enough in your own skin to ask a personal question, bounce something off them. Hey, Damon, tell me something good. What's been happening in your life that's exciting over the last week or two? Tell me something good. And by the way, you know that because when I hung out with your team, we talked about it.
And Larry, my team's doing that, by the way. We record all our calls on Gong. And I almost even sent you a video. I love that they would kick off the meetings instead of going like, here's our agenda, this or that. They're like, hey, tell us something that's been great the last couple of weeks that you've experienced. And you know what I saw, Larry? These people who come into the meeting like, okay, here we go. We're going to go through our numbers, whatever. They light up and then they get into it. And they start talking about, oh, my daughter did this, or I'm taking this class here, I'm doing that. And it just kind of opens the floodgates for a relationship.
You know, it's so interesting because on the podcast, and one day you're going to come on our podcast of Selling from the Heart. But we always do this before we record our podcast because it's non-scripted. I want us to think about this for a moment. Non-scripted. How many times do we walk into sales meetings with a scripted conversation in the back of our head? Where do you know how it's going to go? This is how I'm going to open it. This is what's going to happen and so forth. Well, guess what? You got to be prepared for the right field situation. And I've always trained my brain to this. You got to prepare for something that's going to come out of right field that's going to be the curveball. And believe me, we all been thrown curveballs before. But if you walk into these situations with, this is the polar opposite of most sales training that's out there and sales coaching that's out there. And I'm not here to dog it by no means, none whatsoever, because there's great stuff out there. But when we walk in with these pre-scripted, this is what's going to happen at this mark. This is what's going to happen here. This person's probably going to say this. Then we're going to come back and say this. People sense all that stuff. They 100% sense it. And when trust is low and credibility is low already through the lens of most people, how they view salespeople, flip the script, change the narrative. And it's as simple as, right, when we get people to come on our podcast, hey, what's light your fire right now? What's on your heart? What's weighing on you? What do you want to talk about? Imagine just for a moment, sales leaders, you're going to throw darts at me in this one. You're probably going to never have me come in your company. But serious, Well, what would it be like, salespeople, if whether this is face to face or this on a virtual call, you just sat there the minute the cameras turned on a virtual call? Hey, Damon, man, I'm super grateful for our time together here this morning. I've been looking forward to this call since we scheduled it a week ago. It was like your fire. Tell me something good. What's inspiring you at this moment? Mark my word on this. No one's ever asked that question.
I love it, Larry. Love it. I love it.
Watch their demeanor. Damon, watch their demeanor.
Oh, I know. I'm with you on it. Because again, I'm just repeating myself from before, but I've sat on the other side of the fence where somebody gets on a Zoom call, they got their deck, they can't wait to prepare. I mean, they can't wait to present, you know what I mean? And just go through things. And sometimes as a buyer on the call, just to keep myself entertained, I'll ask them questions like, hey, you live in Atlanta, are you a baseball fan? Or do you like the opera? You know, just something to try to throw them off to see if they can be adaptable and adjust. Just make it a little bit more interesting. Hey, Larry, I want to talk a little bit more about your book. You know, one of the things that you mentioned earlier on is that you never lost a client, right? Unless they got acquired or something like that came up. Do you think part of that right now, the world, I think, lacks trust anyways. I mean, you can't tell, you know, who knows what's going on. There's uncertainty in the world. Do you think that sales leaders and organizations should double down on their existing customers? Not saying that they shouldn't prospect, but should they double down on their existing customers because those are the ones who have a relationship and have trust on them, and make sure that you go above and beyond in that direction?
Great thought, great question. And the answer is yes. I'm all about new business. I'm all about new business growth. I'm all about new logos. But it should not come at the expense of your current clients.
And it's hard right now.
And it's really hard. I think your clients are asking more of you today than they ever have before. And the microscope's on salespeople like crazy. You got a golden opportunity. I mean, it's an overused word. I'm just going to use it, but I'm going to play out selling in a post-trust world to answer your question. Is there's a lot of low-hanging fruit inside your clients' businesses right now. And if I want to grow my business, if I'm a revenue leader, if I'm an executive of a company, it's going to require a little bit of work. But if you can implement the four foundations in selling in a post-trust world, sorry for the shameless plug, Damon.
Do it. I was waiting for you to do it.
If you can really implement this, you will see exponential profit and you'll see exponential revenue. And here's where I'm going with this. And this plays out. You can grow your business right through your clients, not at the expense of your clients. And it's around four things. It's about building authentic relationships. And I'll break down each one of these in the time remaining. Is you got to build authentic relationships. You got to bring meaningful value. You got to bring an inspirational experience, and you have to bring disciplined habits to the forefront. Those four simple things, yet so difficult to consistently implement. The first part of this, and this is where I want executives to really key in on, and this is where I see salespeople struggle with. And it's the first leg of the trust formula. It's am I building authentic relationships? Most relationships in most organizations are shallow. I know this because I'm having salespeople do the work on it. I'm giving them mapping tools to really isolate who are key decision makers and influencers. And we're going 6, 10, 12, 20 deep. And it's just like Swiss cheese out there. There's so many holes in these relationships. It's concerning. That's the opportunity y'all have to improve. And this is the who you know. I want leaders to really key in on this. And leaders, this applies to you as well. Who do you know in your client base? Who do you know and who knows you? And what do you really know about these people? What do you know about them personally and professionally? What makes them come alive? What makes them tick? What are their goals, initiatives, and challenges? Authentic relationships, are you being congruent? Does the walk match the talk? Here's what's interesting. I want leaders really keen on this one. I want you, however y'all define this, I want you to look at in your client base, and I want you to isolate out your top five clients, however you define those. They're the ones that love you, you love them, right? when you're having a bad day, you can walk in, they'll put a smile on your face. We all know who those are. Now, I want you to think, those five clients, those five businesses that I have, as the leader, the salespeople who are working on them, how many people do I really know in that account? And what do they know about me? How many people in that account do I know, and what do I know about them? Leaders should never, and their salespeople should never, become relationally vulnerable in any one of their accounts.
Define relationally, relationship vulnerable for our listeners out there who may not know what that means.
Where I'm going with this is, you know, three or four people. And let's just face it, I don't have to go any farther than that. I've just thrown the stake in the ground on this one. Most salespeople know three or four or five people. Those are the ones they interact with, the ones that maybe push a PO over, the ones that sign an agreement and so forth. Rightfully so, you should get to know those people. Who are all the influencers? Who are all the champions? Who's got the most to lose in that account? Who's got the least to lose in that account? And relationally vulnerable, in my definition of it, is I only know a few people.
Exactly.
And here's what's interesting. This is where I just throw salespeople. I get them to look at this, and I throw their minds in a different direction. I said, I want you to think of your largest account right now. How many people are in that account? Whatever the number is, the number is. I have never, ever, 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 ever had a salesperson who knew more than 5 to 10% of the people in their company, which scares the you-know-what out of me. Literally, I was on a coaching call. This proves out why you need to build authentic relationships, high, wide, and deep. I was literally on a recent coaching call, and we're going through how to build authentic relationships as a first part of the trust formula. And at the very end of the conversation, I looked one of a district sales manager in the eye, and I said, what was your key takeaway from our time together over this past hour? And he goes, we don't have enough relationships built in some of our accounts. Let me tell you a story. We recently lost an account that brought us in $1.2 million annually. We lost it. We lost it because our relationships were at low to mid-level managers inside this place. Not one person in that organization had a relationship of trust with the people that were sitting at the top. And the people that were sitting at the top, boom, pulled the rug out from underneath them and took their business and went elsewhere. They lost $1.2 million in revenue. Just like that. And there's stories like that times 20. So that's why building authentic relationships is mission critical. The second part of this is you got to bring meaningful value. If you just simply go high, wide, and deep, cast that net inside your clients you're working with, and go on a hunt. I'm going to get to know as many people as possible, personally and professionally. What makes them tick? Is this going to take some time? Heck yeah. Remove the excuses. Just start this over time. This is long-term sales sustainability stuff. Then bring meaningful business value. This is business smarts, business substance. Put meat on the conversational bone. You got to really bring substance, because the microscope's on salespeople. It's not just about building relationships. You got to bring business substance to it. And then you got to bring an inspirational experience like none other. That's how you show up. Capture memories and experiences. Inspire your clients into wanting to work with you. I know this. Leaders do two things better than anybody else. They inspire and influence people to see and achieve things they don't think they can do on their own. But in order to inspire, you got to drink from the cup of inspiration. If you can't inspire yourself, you're not going to be able to inspire your clients. And I think in today's day and age, they're just not looking for an experience. They're looking for an inspirational experience. And the last part of this is you got to be disciplined. You got to bring disciplined habits to the forefront. That's when you all show up. So in simple fashion, you can grow your business right through your client base. Your clients are the pathways to revenue and profit. They're also your pathways to new business. And if we broke out the trust formula again, is authentic relationships and meaningful value. That's who you know combined with what you know. And the jet fuel on this is inspirational experiences. That's how you show up. And disciplined habits is when you show up. When you show up, what the heck are you doing? Do that consistently, day in, day out, week in, week out, quarter over quarter, year over year. Mark my word on this. You will increase revenue and you'll increase profits and you'll have fun doing it.
Larry, that's freaking gold right there. One little tidbit that I learned from you at with our time together is ask for referrals at your own 10-yard line, not their 10-yard line, right? You know, if you want to build your client base, I mean, excuse me, if you want to build your sales, do it through your clients, right? And it kind of ties back to what you're talking about, you know, having a lot of relationships inside of that organization, right? Instead of like a two or three or being single threaded, which by the way is one of the main reasons, if not the number one reason why you lose existing customers. But you got to be not afraid to be able to ask, and early on in the process too, hey, can you introduce me to somebody else over here? How could I serve this person over there?
No, you know, 100%, because in selling from the heart, Damon, I talk about if you want to have a full sales funnel, you got to have a full relationship funnel.
Love it.
Again, I'm not a freaking rocket scientist on this. I'm not a rocket scientist, none whatsoever. Don't even play one on TV. However, if I looked at sales funnels, and I'm keeping this really silly simple, but I don't complicate anything. If you look at most deals that are stuck in sales funnels, I can guarantee you this, it's because salespeople don't have enough relationships. They don't really know all the key decision makers and influencers, what makes them tick, what are their goals, initiatives, challenges, all of this. And I'm not saying all, but I'm saying there's a vast majority. And I look at, right, I look at deals, even when I was out in the field, I looked at deals and I go, man, I think the reason why this deal is stalling, it's not because of them. It might be because of me. It might just be because I don't know enough of these people and I don't know them that well. I don't know their issues and challenges, what they want to achieve. What are their goals, dreams, aspirations that I could tie into all of this? And that might be polar opposite against what everyone else might be saying out there and why deals are stalled.
I don't think it is polar opposite. I know. I mean, I know we got to wrap up here, but I get into this kind of stuff, right? Because one thing is, you might be talking to the decision maker or a couple of the decision makers or people involved in the decision, but maybe you're not including the IT person. And the IT person is going to be like, no, I don't want anything to do this because this deal is going to make my life miserable. Well, if you're not having that conversation with that person and understanding what's important to them and you're just leaving them out, you don't even know why you lose the deal half the time.
Oh, totally. So, hey, let's just think through this. Who's got the most to lose? Have you ever thought about that for a second as a salesperson or even as a sales leader? Look at all your deals right now. You've isolated all the key decision makers and influencers. And now ask yourself, who's got the most to lose on this? I'll use the IT example just for a second. Can I share a quick story before you wrap up?
I'm fine. It's up to you. Okay. I want to hear it. I love these stories, by the way.
So I remember this goes back. This was probably 2009, 2010. I took down one of my largest deals at that time. And it was a large hospital here in Southern California. Well-known hospital. And I'd worked on it for years. And I did, you know, hospital tours. And I knew every nook and cranny of this hospital. I wasn't even in the incumbent. None whatsoever. I knew more about what was going on than their current vendor knew what was going on. But again, I ask a ton of questions. So y'all remember, I came out of the copier channel. So in this hospital, I was thinking about, right, we were replacing copiers and printers, right? Hello, that was it. Wasn't high, you know, imagery type stuff. It was copiers and printers. And in this, I'm talking to the CFO, right? I'm talking to their VP of facilities. I'm talking to materials managers, right? I'm talking to their head IT manager for the hospital and all this. And I'm including them in all these meetings and so forth. Well, as this deal starts coming to a close, I asked one question, and that was to the IT person. Here's why. I knew all this stuff had to be connected to networks. I bet you there's somebody in this. I bet you there's somebody right now you're thinking of who's got the most to lose in this thing implementing and this thing possibly going south if something goes south. He says, yeah, it's this person and this person on my help desk. They're the ones you're probably going to be working with. I said, fine, before we agree to agree, can we bring these people in? So I give them peace of mind. They got nothing to worry about. They got the most to lose because they're taken away from what they should be doing. If this thing goes south, they're going to complain to you. You're going to complain to me. It's going to go up the chain and all of that. I brought in help desk people. I brought in supply people, people you would never even think of, to put these people all at ease that I'm the right person to work with. Because I started thinking about, who are all these people that I haven't had conversations with that if this thing goes sour after they sign it, they're the ones that are going to be chucking darts. They're the ones that are going to be complaining. They're the ones that are going to go, man, this was the worst decision you ever made in your life. Why can't salespeople do that? Besides looking at all the key decision makers and influencers, why don't you find the people who, if something happens post installation, they're the ones that are going to be like, they're going to pull their hair out of there. They're going to be screaming. They're going to be blowing your phone up. They're going to be sending emails all over at all kinds of hours of the day. And they're going to shoot this thing all the way up the corporate ladder until something happens.
Awesome. I might actually make that part of talk to my team about that. Just say, hey, just throw that in there. Let's see what people say. Who's got the most to lose if this goes sideways? Love it. Hey, Larry, before we wrap up, can you give me one more good tidbit from your new book?
Yeah. I would say this, and it kind of ties in a little bit of selling from the heart as well. So, I mean, I believe authenticity and the trust are the 1-2 combo punch, especially in a world full of skepticism right now. So besides unpacking the trust formula, which if you choose to read the book, which I hope you do, we'll go into detail on the trust formula. But I think that there's one other thing, and there's selling from the heart splashed all over selling in a post-trust world. I'll just leave you with this because I talk about it, is you got to work harder on yourself than anyone else does. You got to be willing to do the things no one's doing. You got to bring to the forefront the best version of yourself. You got to connect in ways that you never connected before. And it's okay, right? And this isn't pixie sticks and rose petal type stuff that I'm talking about. This is just real world stuff. But again, selling in a post-trust world, it's, you know, the subtitle speaks for itself. It's discover the soft skills that yield hard dollars. And some people say, well, Larry, these aren't soft skills. Well, you're right. They're necessary skills, but we still call them soft skills because that's what we equate them to. But if you want, and if you want to turn, right, if you want to turn the tide with your clients and all that, bring them a trust formula, open up the book, read every page, gobble it up. But then ask yourself when you close it, am I bringing that to my clients? And if not, what can I do about it? And be willing to do it. Be willing to go there. Be willing to ask the questions nobody asks. Be willing to bring an experience nobody is bringing. But I will tell you this. I'll leave you with this. If you cheat on this, right? If you try to sidestep this, and by the way, salespeople love sidestepping things because they want to try to find the fastest pathway to success with the least amount of work. Let's just face it. I'm just calling it what it is. You got to bring discipline habits to the forefront. You got to be massively disciplined with this. The key to your success, everyone has the key to success. It's inside of them. But I'll leave you all with this. I believe the key to success is self-discipline and disciplined habits. It's holding yourself accountable, looking yourself in the mirror. And so if you read Selling in a Post-Trust World, which I hope you do, there's a lot of mirror moments in it. but I've designed it for a reason. It's because we can all become better. It's not just about building trust. There's people way smarter than me that talk about trust, way smarter than me. I call this applied trust. In Selling from the Heart, I call it applied authenticity. I just bring to the forefront things through a practitioner's eyes because I walk, talk, and breathe this stuff. And everything in that book, I do. Everything in that book, we practice at Selling from the Heart. I'm never going to ask anybody to do anything I'm not doing myself. Those are my final pearls of wisdom.
Larry, you're awesome.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
So many great takeaways. I mean, we got the trust formula, right? You know, and also how important it is to be authentic, you know, connect with somebody's heart to get help get to their head. You know, you want to build people relationships, but you also got to make sure that you're relevant and you're adding value. Try to do things differently, right? Take care of the fundamentals. How super important it is to be curious and go out there. And I mean, Larry, you're awesome.
Hey, really quick. I just saw this. Like, can I drop a couple more nuggets?
Do whatever you want, man. I love this.
So again, this goes back to being curious, and this I just think curiosity and feedback are breakfast of sales champions. So this is what I'd be doing. And for the listeners out there, you can grab a sheet of paper on this one and grab a pen. And after this, you may want to press pause and listen to these and just reflect on them. But if I'm a salesperson right now, and if I'm a sales leader, I'm holding you accountable to do this. And it'd be this. I'd be looking key decision makers, influencers in the eyes. I'd be thanking them for their business. Damon, I'm super grateful. Thank you for the opportunity to serve you here at Learn It. I really appreciate it. If I can just ask you to go back in time, man, I can't believe, Damon, that we've been doing business together now for 3 years. Holy cow, right? It's been 3 years since we agreed to agree. If I can take you back in time. So now, right, instead of it being August 2024, right, this is August 2021. And now fast forward. What's the value that I've been bringing to you and your company over the last 3 years? What's that experience look like? Can you describe it to me? What words would you use, Damon? And the reason why I'm asking you this is because I'm committed. I'm committed to our relationship. And I'm committed to growing and nurturing our relationship to help you create better business inside your company. And the more I know, the more I can help. And then just stop. They will tell you. People will tell you. And if there's pause, if they look at you really awkwardly, it's because they don't want to tell you. That means you got some opportunity to work on this. Here's another one. What's the experience, right? Can you describe the experience that I've been bringing to you and your company? What's that been like? What's that experience look like? We live in this world that's full of experiences. But if you were sitting down with a friend of yours and you had to describe the experience I was bringing to your company, what would you share with your friend? These are mirror moment questions, and these are the questions you need to start asking your clients.
And Larry, you know why you need to ask your clients? Because I love challenging. I mentor a bunch of young salespeople, relatively new in their career, and also with our team. And I ask them, what value do you bring your customers? And a lot of times they'll give me answers. And you know what I tell them? I bet you you're off. You know, what you perceive the value you bring is really not the value that you actually do bring from them. So you need to ask them and find out from them so you can really understand. And I'm not going to say, look, you know who told me that? Mike Weinberg. And Mike Weinberg gave a great example. We were on a call with him one time, a big call. There's probably 100 people on the call. And one of the new reps from my team said, hey, Mike, I'm new at Learn It. What do you recommend I do? And he said, if one of your senior sales reps will give you access to one of your customers, to some of their customers, set up a call with them and say, how does Learn It really bring value to this organization? Yeah. What a gold mine that is right there. And we did that for like 4 or 5 customers, and all of their answers were different than what they thought they were going into it.
Dude, 100%, right? Right. It's so interesting. The value that you think you bring is completely different than most of the time what your clients think. Now, I'm going to flip.
So important.
I'm going to flip this around. The relationships you think you have with your clients, is that the relationships your clients think they have with you? I love to see the expression on salespeople's faces when I ask, do you have rock solid relationships? Do you have a strong relationship with your clients? And they say, yeah. And I said, okay.
I do.
Yeah. Oh, great, great. Would you mind giving me the contacts, name, and phone number so I can ask?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dead silence. So
it's about being self-aware and being honest with yourself, right?
100%.
And because a lot of times you're afraid to get that feedback, right? Because it's like a kink in your armor, maybe, or hurt your ego. And what I hear you saying too, Larry, which I'm totally down for, is push the ego away. Ask questions, be curious, learn, and build those relationships. I mean, that's all. Well, before I say let's go, do you have anything else? This is, you're getting going now.
You'll have to have me back for round two. How's that, Damon?
Absolutely. Hey, Larry, like I said, this has been awesome. Even as a Dodger fan, this has been awesome. We know your book's out and everybody needs to get a copy of it and they should connect with you on LinkedIn and send you some of their top takeaways. How else do you want people to connect with you?
You know, go to sellingfromtheheart.net. You can learn, you can connect with us there. You can learn everything that's going on at Selling From The Heart. If you want to connect with me even more, you can bust out your mobile device, whether that be whatever your mobile device of choice is, and just text, and you can text the word trust to 21,000. That's another great way to connect to me. Just text the word trust to 21,000. But you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn every single day. You can check us out on YouTube. I'm not hard to find socially.
Larry, you're awesome, man. Check out this podcast, Selling From The Heart. And so audience, listeners, I mean, what a treat today. So if you go out and get Larry's book and Selling in a Post-Trust World, and if you enjoyed our episode today, I don't know how you couldn't, like and subscribe, like and subscribe to the Learn It All podcast. And until next time, stay curious and keep learning. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Larry.
Oh, you're very welcome. Talk to you soon.